Only editable. Editor is your friend.
I like that.
All right. Good morning. I'm your host, Roger Nichols. Our guest today, very special guest. And in the interest of full disclosure, and despite the fact he tries to hide this, he is related to me. He's a second cousin of mine. Our grandfathers were brothers. His name is Dave Bell, and he's been working for the Trailblazers for more years than I can shake a stick at. Good morning and welcome, Dave.
Good morning, and thank you very much for inviting us here. I appreciate that.
All right. I want to start out with a background and see how you got where you are. It's always fascinating to look back on things. Tell us how you got into radio first and then where you ended up with the Blazers.
Oh, okay. How did I get into radio first? You know, back in high school, we used to be able to, at lunchtime, go down and spin records at the PA thing like that. Mm-hmm. I said, wow, that'd be cool. You know, there are people that really make a living doing this kind of thing. And I checked it out, you know, Dick Novak and mm-hmm. some of the legendary Portland radio people were my inspiration for mm-hmm. doing all that. So when I went to college, I majored in having fun and playing on the radio mm-hmm. instead of being serious about it. Mm-hmm. College and I decided to part company afterwards, but I got to play in radio enough that I started making a living at it.
Mm-hmm. So where were you first at college? It was the first time you were on the air, right?
The college was the first time I was on the air, yeah.
And that was what was
Pacific
where?
University in Forest Grove.
Okay.
Back in the early 60s.
Okay.
And I went on to Kelso, Washington, and Anchorage, Alaska. And then I got this mail that said, greetings. spent the next 4 years in the service trying to be on the radio. Mm-hmm. They taught me to be an electrician instead because they know better than I do.
Ah, yes.
Got out of college, went back to, got out of the service, I should say, and went back to college, got my degree in broadcast communications and journalism. And right after that, I had been working part-time in radio while I was in school. Jan and I had gotten married by then. Mm-hmm. And I was approached by KOIN in Portland, mm-hmm. which was a big deal radio station in Portland history, to apply for a job. In those days, you needed a college degree to work at the lowest end of the totem pole.
Yeah.
And I got hired. And one of the first things they were looking for was somebody to take over the engineering duties for this new basketball team that had just come to town. And I was a new daddy by that time and needed every penny I could get, so I said, hey, me, I'll do it. Uh-huh. So I started working as an employee of COIN, doing the engineering for the Bill Shawnee broadcasts in the second year of the franchise.
Okay. So because KOIN had the contract at first.
That they did, yeah. They had it for 5 or 6 years, 7 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. And 2 or 3 years after that, I bought out the contract and contracted it on our own, and we did that after that.
And still?
And, we still have a variation of the same company. Mm-hmm. And Jan, right after my wife, who you can't see but is sitting just to my left.
Ready to poke you should you make a mistake anywhere along the line here.
Right after the championship year, I needed somebody to handle the visiting radio broadcasts. I was doing Bill Shawnee and the home broadcasts. Mm-hmm. And she said, what about me? And I said, well, you're a secretary at Tektronix. It's not really a broadcast background. And she said, you can teach me. And so I did. And she did this for 30 years. I did it for 42 and counting.
Wow. It's still involved. Now, you're backed away from all of the going on with the team to every place.
Yeah, I never did do much of that. We got to go to Chicago in the championship series and some things like that. My 99% of what I did was at home, Memorial Coliseum, and later at the Rose Garden / Moda Center.
Yes, right. Yes. I can never remember that. It's always. Tell me how it would work. Can you run through how you'd set up it for a broadcast? What would you do?
Just I get there early. I'm kind of finicky that way. I get into the arena, say, like at noon, and all of my equipment is stored in the farthest point of, away from the broadcast position.
This is the way it works. Right.
The elevators and so on like that, and get all of the broadcast equipment, which, you know, was a hard to describe on the radio, but it's a 24-channel mixer that we use most of the channels to plug in audio sources. Mm-hmm. So I've got 6 microphones down on the floor. I've got 2 interviews down on the floor, interview microphones mm-hmm. down on the floor. And then all of the stuff up at the broadcast position and so on like that. And then picture a guy in tails sitting at the grand piano, doing his thing from one end to the other. And that's what I did. I played the keyboard. I played the audio control and mixed the audio to the point where it sounded good. At least I thought it did.
Well, as somebody who's listened to a lot of those broadcasts over the years, I can say you did a darn fine job on that.
You're my cousin. You're supposed to say that.
All right. I was reading about right off the cue card here, but it apparently worked out okay. So tell me some of the secrets of mixing audio like that. When a shot goes through, and do you pot up the crowd, or you don't need to because they're so loud anyway?
It's all anticipation. Yeah. You have to know what's going to come next, mm-hmm. even though you don't know what's going to come next. Right. But when somebody is getting ready to take a shot, you don't open that microphone yet mm-hmm. because with 24 open mics, nobody would hear anything.
Yeah.
So it's all about balance. But when somebody is taking a shot at the south end rim, a basket, mm-hmm. you stand ready and then open that.
Yeah.
Let me back up just a second
sure.
here. One of the keys for this whole thing happening was KOIN. Mm-hmm. When I went to work at KOIN, it was part of the dark ages of broadcasting, the
right.
grand glory years of broadcasting, because a lot of it was still live music.
Mm-hmm.
They were the only station, like in the West Coast or the Western United States, that still did that. But I got to learn how to mix audio from a live music source. So when the piano player was going to do a riff, I had to know, just like an audio guy in a band right now, has to know what's going to happen next. So I learned how to do it from that musical background from the old KOIN days, and it translates to the same kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
anticipation.
Wow. Obviously, and good fingers and good hands.
Were good they're a little arthritic now, but they could do
We'll get to the stories, because that's the cool part of the stories. Tell us a little bit about working with Bill Shonley.
He is everything. He's more than what you see. Mm-hmm. And he's a great, great person when you meet him and talk with him and so on like that. He is one of the finest individuals, people, that I've ever met. He is... I will sing his praises forever. I don't do a lot of that. I'm not mm-hmm. starstruck. I'm not mm-hmm. prone to, as you well know, talking well about others.
Yeah.
Bill Shonley is a class act. He's really great. I was sick this last year, and here's the great Bill Shonley contacting me regularly while I was in the hospital and at home recovering, mm-hmm. and he's been down to the house and so on like that. So I can sit here and just gush Shonleyisms all along. He's a very rare individual in that he's a really, really good guy and a wonderful broadcaster. He's got a tremendous voice, great personality. It was an absolute honor to be able to work with him for 25 years or something like mm-hmm. that, sitting alongside him before he had to retire.
Yes, there's a story there. We won't go into that.
No, let's not do that.
Okay, but let's talk about some of the things that happened when you have classic players of that many years. The majority of the cool people in the basketball world pass through the Coliseum or / the new stadium. when you were there. Anything, any incidents that pop out? Or?
One of the things that really, really was frustrating about some of the most popular players in the world was how they would react. Now, understand, I'm talking about Chicago winning the world championship against the Portland Trail Blazers in Chicago, coming from way behind at the very end to win it. So justifiably, these guys were having fun. But Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan stood on my broadcast equipment at Chicago Stadium at courtside with that trophy in their hands. And I have come so close to being probably in jail for the rest of my life because I would have kneecapped Michael Jordan because he was standing 2 feet from me on my equipment with that thing. I wasn't real happy about the fact that, you know, we lost the championship then anyway. So memorable experiences, yeah, that's one. I could have gone to jail for doing permanent damage to Michael Jordan.
Oh, I'm so glad you didn't. Were there any personalities that you really liked or people that you thought were really good to work with?
Well, it was two totally different eras. Or at least, it was kind of a continuum, I suppose, going from one era to another and so on like that. In a nutshell, the early days were a lot easier because the players were approachable. Mm-hmm. They didn't, the organization eventually put them in a cage and we didn't get to associate with them as much. I traveled with the team a little bit more in the earlier days and we'd get to know them on the road. Strangely, though, some of the greatest contact with some of these guys were with the guys that were only there for half a season or mm-hmm. one season or so. They were as grateful to be there as I was.
Oh,
let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And so they were, the Peter Verhoevens and, people like that mm-hmm. that were really cool. But of the stars, I still have a good relationship with Bill Walton. Mm-hmm. Even though Bill was one of the first ones they built a wall around. Mm-hmm. And it was not because of a star syndrome or anything like that. He had a speech impediment. Mm-hmm. And he stuttered badly when he played for the Blazers.
That's the first I have ever heard of that.
If you listen to Bill Walton now, it's impossible to believe because he's gone 180, he's gone 360 around again.
Yeah.
He worked to get rid of the problem, and he did, to his credit. But there's a guy who's a all-star, a superstar, mm-hmm. Who they built a wall around, and yet he's still the most approachable guy around. We used to, when we had a better relationship with the team, because we were able to approach them, we used to go to picnics at his, his attorney or his agent or somebody like that mm-hmm. over at his house and play soccer with him.
Yeah.
Now, when you've got Bill Walton as the striker on your side.
Two steps and he's on the other side of the field,
that's
right?
Yeah, we couldn't keep up with him. And I was much younger then, too.
Yeah.
He was a great guy. From that same era, Dave Twardzik.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Twardzik was a class act. Just as friendly and nice guy. He eventually, when he retired from playing, got into broadcasting and became one of our announcers, the analysts of the mm-hmm. team. So I got to know him a little bit better mm-hmm. Before he went into management. And more recently, guys like Brandon Roy, who tragically has lost his career early to injury, was... really, really, really good guy. Damian Lillard is the new Brandon Roy right mm-hmm. now. Very real people. Nothing mm-hmm. phony about them. And I'm singling these guys out because I can tell you a whole lot of the other names that I won't tell you that didn't fit into that category.
Yeah. A lot of people came with chips on their shoulder. And, I'm cool. I'm in the NBA. Gosh, and don't bother me, kid.
Yeah. Well, there's an awful lot of that even today, although I will say the Trailblazers organization, after a period of time, 10 or 12 years ago, 15 years ago now, where these weren't the classiest individuals in the league. The organization and the ownership, Mr. Allen and the ownership, made a conscious decision to make sure that there was character as well as talent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's paying off. The way the team is made up right now, these guys are good people. You know, if you can talk to them, Nicholas Batum is you know, very approachable and very easy to talk to. Wesley Matthews, some of the guys that are on there right now, good people, good
mm-hmm.
people.
All right, working for the organization over the years, your relationship with the Trailblazer management, has it always been as good?
It has, because mostly I was invisible. Again, you know, down at this point of the totem pole,
yeah.
they don't really know there. But Mr. Glickman, Harry Glickman, who was responsible for the team getting there in the first place, very good guy,
mm-hmm.
very good guy, and would do anything for you and would go out of his way. And you know, that's not the kind of thing you think of Mr. Glickman, but
yeah.
he's a very good guy. There's Bucky Buckwalter, who incidentally is a neighbor of mine now over on the Oregon coast,
uh-huh.
and I get to see once in a while. But again, good people from the earlier days of the management of the organization. Jack Ramsey was God, mm-hmm. as far as I was concerned. He's probably the best basketball mind slash coach slash person that I ever met. When he died this last year,
yeah.
it was a tragedy. Mr. Allen, Paul Allen, one of the richest men in the world, but he rescued that franchise.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't be having this conversation right now, probably, if he hadn't purchased the Trailblazers.
It would be someplace else, and somebody else would be operating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever met him, Mr.
Yes,
Allen?
I have.
Uh-huh.
He's not the most approachable person mm-hmm. in the world. Again, when we were in Chicago for the championship series a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
we ran into him and his mother, Faye, in the elevator. And, you know, you get into an elevator, you're sort of forced into a conversation or
yeah.
something like that.
Yeah.
And I said, what do I say with this guy? So I just, you know, told him we were having good luck with the broadcast and
yeah.
everything was good.
That's all you can say.
And he liked that.
Well, of course he did. You mentioned championship. Can we talk a little bit about the championship year? Was there extra pressure on everybody involved when you got down toward the playoffs?
That's a good question. I always like telling interviews that.
Yeah, that's right. That. It buys you time. Yeah,
that's an excellent question. at the time, I don't think there was. It was just rare air for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the team had never come close to that before.
Yeah.
So we didn't know how we were supposed to, we didn't know we were supposed to be nervous about it.
Uh-huh.
We didn't know anything about it. And even right up to the very last minutes, when it was obvious that, hey, this team is going to win the world championship.
Mm-hmm.
That few minutes was hectic. That was incredibly intense. Because the fans are going absolutely nuts. I still lost one of my favorite stopwatches, and that's what we did use in those days, not
yeah.
this fancy computer thing you have now.
Yeah.
But, to a souvenir hunter
uh-huh.
who took off. We had to go into the locker room with the broadcast, and I had to anticipate that that was going to happen.
Uh-huh.
So we had it set up, but we didn't have time to test anything out.
Oh, gosh.
So if you go back now and you listen to that part of the broadcast, the post-game show, it's not my proudest moment, but but we did get it on the air.
Okay, that's great. And then that's all we saw, because CBS immediately cut away to a stupid golf tournament. I'm still mad about that today, and that's a lot of years ago to be mad at them.
Don't get me started.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, you know that for all those years that most of us would watch the television for the video and turn off the audio of the television, listen to Sean and do his thing. Because
yeah, and so many people did.
Yeah.
So many people did that. And because, you know, one, it was, you could do it in those days. Now
yeah.
with the processing and all of the audio
and
video,
yeah.
they don't match up.
Yeah.
There's actually a radio that you can buy that you can turn the delay up and down on the radio.
No,
you
kidding.
Can, yeah.
Really? Wow. Okay,
yeah.
I'm going to be in the market for that sometime soon. So, obviously, a couple of quick questions. Radio's changed so much since you've been involved with it very beginning, as we know. All of it good?
No, not all to the good. I mean, I'll be right up front with that. You're in an area here where change hasn't affected you the way it has affected most of the broadcast business. I don't want to get terribly political here, but the FCC and its infinite wisdom at some point in the other, FCC, if you're listening, but allowed multiple ownership.
Yep.
And with that, and you know, I'm singing to the choir here with you. I understand
indeed.
That, but for the sake of the argument, having a whole lot of broadcast outlets owned by very few owners was not a good thing.
Does not serve the public interest.
It does not at all. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I really love coming to someplace like the Dalles and seeing how radio was and how it's supposed to be, because you know this is. You guys at Haystack are local owners. You're hands on. You know, I walked in and I made the comment to you that maybe only people in broadcasting could understand, but there's real people here.
Yes. Yeah. It's not all out of it. We do much of the day, but every morning, live disc jockeys on the air.
Yeah. That's and you know that is not the case anymore. So. No, I sort of pine for the old days, but then I'm retired now, so I don't have to worry about that.
Okay. Anything you want to make sure that you pass on to our listeners? Things that, you got any words of wisdom for us?
Oh, gosh. You know, treasure what you have here. I will say that because, you know, I just go back and reiterate what I said. You get into the bigger cities and into larger markets, and it's a faceless medium, and you know, you're able to sit here doing broadcast with your cohorts who are entertaining people, and you're informing people about things that are going on right here. And there's so very little of that going on anymore that I'm sitting here just being an old guy talking about the good old days. But you know, they were good old days because they were good.
Yeah,
and it's as a whole, the broadcast business is not that wonderful anymore. There, FCC, I tempered it. Okay.
All right. Nicely put. Thanks so much. Dave Bell has been our guest today. Thanks so much for being with us.
Are we done already?
Yeah.
Well, it's been my pleasure. Thank you very much. I've only been trying to do this for 2 years.
That's right. Something like that. Thanks much.